Blog Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Gunakish at Blog Talk Radio and the Pettawoods Group, and you are in the right place. And indeed, that was AC/DC, Back in Black. I'd like to open the show with that because I really am paying tribute to all the marketing superstars that we have out there. And hopefully everyone has seen the new Intel ad where they've got a rock star, and that's the kind of music they play in the background. And it really gets me juiced up and revved up for this radio show today and to talk about a great topic in demand generation, and it's all about building personas today. So again, welcome to the show. This is the Demand Generation Essential Series. Each week in this 12-week series, which, by the way, is completely educational and free to all of our listeners, we'll bring to you an interview with a demand generation practitioner. And what's so great about these interviews is it's not someone telling you what you should be doing. It's actually someone sharing with you exactly how they did it. And as a marketing practitioner, that's the kind of stuff that I need to hear. Today's show is number 4 of 12. So again, this is a 12-week series. We had our first show on Thursday, July the 30th, and our last show will be on October the 15th. So every Thursday at 1 o'clock, go to Blog Talk Radio and feel free to listen, and we'd love to have everyone join us. Today's guest is Joe Tenhagen of NOSCO, and as I mentioned earlier, he is going to be sharing with us the how and why of persona creation and its use in a digital world, which really takes the whole idea of personas to a whole new level. However, before we get started with Joe, let's take care of some housekeeping. And so the first thing I'd like to mention to all of the listeners of the broadcast is this is Blog Talk Radio. This is a completely free social media, a way to talk to listeners and to really help educate people around demand generation. So what that means is this. My switchboard right now is completely lit up. There are no open slots. So everyone that has called in to Blog Talk Radio to participate in the program, you need to hang up. Because the way you participate in Blog Talk Radio is this streams live over the internet. So you should go to the link that we sent to you in the email that invited you to today's session. Click on the link that takes you to Blog Talk Radio. It takes you to today's show. You just press the play chat feature because our radio show is live and streaming over the internet right now. So everyone that has dialed in, you need to hang up. You need to go to the link and click on it so you can hear this live radio show over the internet through your computer speakers. The other way to access today's show is just to go to www.blogtalkradio.com, and you can put in the search box persona, and today's session will come up. Again, this radio show is live right now. So everyone that has dialed in, at some point in the show, I'm going to be hanging up on you because we need these lines open for callers who are going to have questions later. So go to Blog Talk Radio to hear the show or go back and click on the link. And, oh, good, we've got some people that are listening. That's great. And, again, this is Blog Talk Radio, completely free, and it streams live over the internet. So you should be accessing this through the internet and not the telephone. So that's the first way that you really experience today is through Blog Talk Radio. But there's a number of other things that you can also do to enhance your experience today. Number two, you can go to our chat room. And, again, there's a chat feature as you get into our show page. If you have not yet registered for Blog Talk Radio, it will ask you to register, and it only takes about 90 seconds. If you have already registered, then you can go straight into the chat room. We typically always have a lively chat going on in there, so I encourage you all to do that during the show. And we'll also be taking questions from the chat room as well. And today's chat room is being moderated by my good friend Tom Kahana. And the other way you can participate today is to tweet about it. This is a completely free demand generation educational series. again, every week we're talking to really smart people who have been there and done that. And it's just a great way to listen to what experienced people have to say about what they're doing in demand generation. So feel free to tweet about today's session, what you learned, what you liked, or maybe even what we could do better. We would really appreciate that. And then the other way that you can continue your education after experiencing today is by making sure that you're registered for our series. And if you register for our series, then not only do you get the interview, which basically the interviews are free to everybody anytime because they're all on Blog Talk Radio, but we also have some pretty cool assets that we'll make available to you. There's typically a white paper or some kind of tool that is specific to the interview topic that'll just help you take your education to the next level and also help you educate other people. So if you're listening to our radio show today and you are not yet registered, you can go to our website, which is www.pedowitzgroup.com. On the left-hand column on our homepage, you can register, and we'll make sure that you get access to all the really cool assets that we have. I think you'll enjoy that. So before we get into the interview with Joe, there's one other thing that I wanted to share with everybody. And we're about a quarter of the way through the 12-week series that we've been working on. And for everyone that registered, when you went to register, we had a question, and we asked you, what was your number one demand generation challenge, or the number one thing you wanted to do in demand generation this year? And so I wanted to share with you the results so far, because we've had a fair number of people already register for the show and also to get all the assets. So let me share with you based what our listeners are telling us that their top demand generation challenges are. So the number one answer, and 30% of you answered it this way, said that my top demand generation challenge is I need to improve my own education around demand generation. And given that our show is all about education in demand generation, that is exactly what we would expect. But I will say that in this category of demand generation, which is emerging and growing, tripling, it's just the growth is phenomenal, education is going to continue to play a key part in it. There are many organizations right now that are looking for ways to provide additional education in this emerging market. One of the things that we're doing at the Pedowitz Group, for example, is we are working with the Online Marketing Institute, and you can just go look them up on the Internet, to bring to market 16 to 20 hours of coursework that will certify marketers in demand generation. And I just think that is absolutely beyond cool. And that certification is going to be available in the fall, so absolutely be looking for that. So the top answer from our survey was 30% of you want to improve your own education. And I'll tell you, what came in second was a real surprise to me. And again, these are responses from the form, marketers telling us what their top demand generation challenges are. Number two, and 20% of you gave this a number one ranking, said that what you're really looking to do is to improve number of leads. And number three at 17% was improve quality of leads. Now, it's been a while since I've seen these two in that order. For quite some time, all the surveys that I've seen and been involved in, most marketers are looking to improve quality of leads before they look to improve number of leads. And when I reflected on why improved number of leads was so incredibly important right now, I think it probably has a lot to do with the economy, and it also may have to do with the fact that we have a lot of global listeners, especially Europe, has been very, very active in listening to the radio show and also participating in and completing the forums. So I just thought that was interesting. So the top three demand generation challenges that we're seeing right now, number one, improve my own education. Bravo, we all need to be doing that. Number two, improve number of leads. And number three, improve quality of leads. And then this was followed in order, and we don't really need the percentages, but then you said what we need to do next is to improve sales and marketing alignment, and we've already had a great interview in week two around how to do that. That was actually with Ed Thompson at Brain Shark. Then you said I got to improve my company's education around what this is. Then it was improve metrics and reporting, and then a number of you are actively looking at marketing automation systems right now, really trying to figure out how to knit all this together. So I thought these survey results were interesting, and I thought I would share those with you. I'll share them again in week 8. And then we'll actually put together a quick white paper at the end of our 12-week series for everyone that had registered. Because I think it's always good to know what are marketers thinking about, what are they focusing on, and this is the kind of survey that certainly helps us understand where the market is going. Okay, so that's behind us. I want to introduce our guest and hear what he has to say about building and using personas in a digital world. So let me start by saying Joe Tenhagen, VP of Marketing and Sales over at Nosco, is a real innovator in the field of demand generation. And you're going to learn more about why he's such an innovator during this interview. But Joe is constantly pushing the envelope of what you can do in demand generation. Joe's background is he joined Nosco in 2006 as Vice President of Marketing and also Sales for the Eastern U.S., which I think is an extraordinary combination. Because certainly as I go out and I take a look at the marketers that are most successful in demand generation, having sales as part of their job description or in the background is something that is extremely helpful because at the end of the day, the whole job of demand generation is all about revenue. So it's not just, you know, doing our marketing projects like a lot of us have been used to. So I think that's a unique combination that gives him a unique perspective, one of the reasons why he pushes things so far. Prior to joining Nosco, he actually was in a consulting role with them where he helped develop and implement a new marketing and branding strategy. And at that point, it was all about enhancing Nosco's solutions-focused core competency. Joe has also worked with leaders in the industry. So he has worked with Fleming Packaging Corporation. He's worked for Avery Dennison and also Rockwell International. He's got more than 15 years of packaging experience, a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Bowling Green. He's married to the lovely Lynn and has a beautiful daughter named Anna. She goes by Anna Banana with all her closest friends and relatives. And Joe is a good friend of mine. So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Debbie. I appreciate being here. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure to have you here, Joe. You know I'm your biggest fan with the work that you're doing around personas. And so before we kind of get into exactly what you're doing, why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about Nosco and your role there?
Yeah, that sounds good. Nosco is a 100-year-old company that produces pharmaceutical and medical device packaging. Now, that would include folding cartons that go around the bottle, the actual bottle labels, and the inserts that are put into the either attached to the bottle or put into the folding carton, where it can provide instructions, et cetera, on the safety and the problems with drugs. And we're also actually now getting into compliance packaging to make sure that people take their drugs when they're supposed to, which is a big issue in the economy, as you're hearing a ton of things about this week on CNN. And we also add security features and RFID tags to the products, because right now it's a $10 billion a counterfeit industry, which may surprise you, most of it coming from third world countries, including China, India, et cetera, which is causing a big problem here in the United States, which a lot of the issues around importation of drugs from Canada, et cetera, is really growing. So we serve the drug and device manufacturers and the companies that contract, actually produce it for them, like contract manufacturers or contract packagers. And I think what's interesting is when I came into this industry, you know, you might think that there are relatively few drug producers that are very large, but in fact, there are more than 600 drug and device producers outside of the top 10 mega producers in the United States. So although the top 10 have, you know, 50% of the revenue, there are 550, 590 other companies that we want to get to, because our value proposition is solutions engineering, solving one-to-one problems, and the smaller to medium-sized companies really value that. So our challenge is how do we get to that? How do we get to those guys and have a conversation with them?
Yeah, and that's absolutely a fascinating market. I learned a lot when you and I started talking about what Nosco actually does. And Nosco as a company is how old?
100-year-old.
That's 100 years. That's absolutely amazing. And tell me, what is your role in that environment?
You know, we started really marketing I'd say, in best practices about 4 years ago. So we grew up as a great little Midwest company, doing extremely well, have very big customers, you know, servicing them like crazy, doing a job, have a reputation. We were unknown in the East Coast and the West Coast. So when I came in, we tried to redevelop the brand value proposition to be more solutions focused, because that's what we did. We're very good at solving problems, but nobody knew it except our current customers. So since we didn't do any marketing, I interviewed customers and some prospects, found out what they needed, found out what we were great at, and really put the strategy together with corporate management, which were fantastic at the time, a lot of good support. And we actually created this brand promise of complete packaging, individual solutions, and built the company culture around that. Unfortunately, a lot of that was in place. So now we are relatively known on the East Coast now. We have several customers that are buying from us, and we also have customers on the West Coast that are buying from us as well. And the way in the door was, what's your problem? We'll solve it. And that's where we're really growing. So my role
I'm fascinated by your combined role as VP of marketing and also VP of sales for the Eastern region. So when you were going out and talking to customers and trying to figure out from a marketing perspective, you know, how you needed to go to market, was it helpful having a dual role?
Yeah, you know, it really is, because I've been in marketing roles where marketing was a separate universe from sales, and they never saw eye to eye. We're never in sync, and the work that marketing did hardly ever translated into sales. And what they do to follow up, et cetera, was always, you know, grudgingly they would, you know, do what they were told by their boss. The way we're able to really put it together is we have a sales and marketing team, and I'll get to that a little later, but we work together. And if we don't agree, we don't do it. Now, there are certain areas where I say, guys, just trust me on this, okay? I'm in marketing. I've done it for 20 years. And sometimes they say, Joe, just trust me. I'm a sales guy. I've done it for 20 years. Just let me do it. But really, when we get together and there's the synergy occurs, it's pretty amazing, because we're tracking with each other. There doesn't have to be, hey, let's set up a meeting to review these 50 leads from the trade show. It's a more interactive dialogue. And it really is good.
So let's move to the work that you're currently doing on personas. So did you just wake up one day and say, you know, I need to build some personas? Kind of where did all that stem from?
That's a good question. My initial frustration with the work and the response, you know, we're working with trade shows, print advertising, we do emails, we do all those marketing mixes that you would expect. But the problem was we spent all our time following up, chasing down these guys that showed a little bit of interest, right? Got this little, like on Tommy Boy, if you ever saw that movie, he's got this little sale, right, a little prospect, and he's trying to run after it and try to make it into dollars. And the problem is that 80 people show real interest in your trade show that you spent 4 months getting ready for, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then it's a 3-day event, and then you're like, I gotta follow up, I gotta make all this happen. And the problem is that maybe only one or two would really care about what you had to offer. So you spend all this money investing in it, and then at the end of the day, you really don't get a lot of production, and then you follow up with dozens of phone calls, and it just makes people upset. So in the context of that approach, we decided, well, how do we match our customers' buying process with our selling process instead of making them buy when we wanted them to buy? And that really where everything started. So we talked about marketing automation, and we talked about personas. And for me, a persona is somebody who we know exactly who they are. It's sort of like the center of the bell curve of who a person is. I've always viewed a persona as answering the question, who is a typical person in any marketing target, whether it's a marketing person, a packaging engineer, a supply chain leader. It can also come down to where they may be entry-level person, a vice president, et cetera. So who is that person? Really, let's get intimate with that person and understand what their needs are. So when we dove into personas as a way to really have an intimate conversation with somebody, instead of blasting out a, you know, an ad that's designed for everybody but really hits only a few people. Let's change the game. Let's really be focused.
You said a whole lot that statement. So let me go back and ask you something. And again, this is something that you and I have talked about before, but I think this would be great for our listeners. One of the things that you mentioned when I asked you where the idea for sellers come from, you talked about taking the time to match the customers or the prospects' buying process with how you guys sell. What was that like, and what does that have to do with building personas?
Yeah, it's interesting that we talk about persona as sort of the standalone thing, but it really is a part of an entire new way of marketing. And when we started building personas, we thought we knew everything, right? But we realized we didn't know everything. We knew without the detailed analysis. So when we decided to create personas, it was because we really wanted to have an intimate conversation with our targets. Like most people in B2B, we send out email blasts, we look for opens and clicks and downloads and feel good if we hit certain numbers, right? But we're really not having a conversation with those people. We don't really know who we're talking to. We know a few things about them, but we know a lot about them. So what we decided to do is to define what a person is, what are their objectives and responsibilities in their job, what are their pain points that they must overcome to meet their own objectives, what are the current ways that NASCO help make it easier for them to meet their objectives, you know, how do I get them to take 10 seconds to listen to me, so there's really creating a connection. And even further than that, let's take a deeper dive into who these people are. What's the age group? What's the leisure habits? You know, sports, social. What research tools do they use, online, offline? How do they educate themselves? Could be trade shows, Google search, industry associations, company websites, trade shows, or just one-on-one presentations. So we really wanted to know everything possible about this person. This persona, to make sure that we were well connected with them as far as understanding their needs, key messaging, how to really reach them in this world of over-information. Does that help answer your question?
It does. So let me ask you this question. So as you were developing personas, and again, you've been in marketing for over 20 years, and clearly one of the most fundamental things that we do as marketers is we create a target profile, somebody that we want to market to. How was this building these personas that were where you were also engaged in understanding their online or their digital behavior? How was building these personas different from maybe what you might have done before when you weren't working in a digital world?
You know, when you talk to customers one-to-one and you kind of know what they need, you can watch the actual body language, and you're creating and delivering print ads, which, you know, is really like a commercial on TV. You know, hits everybody, may only appeal to 5% or 10% of the audience, and then it kind of goes away for everybody else, so you're wasting a lot of money. So on the online world, it gives us the opportunity to target content right for that person based on their needs, based on the key messaging, so they get it immediately. And because on the online web, the back button is our worst enemy, you better connect with these guys within 15 seconds or you're done. So personas are much more important now because of the online world and the over-information society that we have. So let's say for a packaging engineer, I want to understand what his pain points are, how to solve his problems, and that'll be the message I feed to him or her. On a supply chain vice president, he wouldn't see that. He'd see something different about how to streamline, make a supply chain more effective. Now, maybe the same product I'm selling, but it focuses on those key benefits that really direct to that person's pain point.
And I think you would also see, again, across your personas, them interacting in the online world differently. So a VP of supply chain may not be checking out blogs, may not be tweeting, may not be cruising websites looking for information, whereas a package engineer with a particular problem might be. So did you guys also spend time thinking about which of your personas would be interacting and which media sources that they would be using?
Yes, that's part of the persona database that we're building. It was kind of interesting, and we probably want to talk about how we do that, build the persona later, but it was interesting that because we have X products and services to sell, it was interesting to break it down into a matrix of, okay, who's going to benefit by the service, what's the benefit to them, and what content do they need to better understand it and better support the product. So we did feed out different content to different personas and built a nurturing campaign for them. So, if, for example, if they click on supply chain video, for example, how to, you know, big replenishment, cost too much, for example, they click on that video, they watch it, they get another piece of content tailored to what they just saw, bringing them to the next level of education. For a packaging engineer, it would be the design aspects of a folding cartons, compliance packaging. He watches a video on that. He clicks on it. Automatically, he gets a nurturing email to say, here, take a deeper dive with a white paper or an ebook. So it really is content tailored to those people. Now,
so
what makes this even more challenging is many of the big decisions in changing processes is a team-based effort. So not only do we have to take care of the VP of supply chain or VP of operations, we have to make sure that they understand the value in the other organization as well, because he needs to know, I may be a champion in this, but I don't even know what my, you know, what the rest of the organization thinks about this. So in a way, we're able to offer him other personas in a unique way, sort of, hey, join the team. You know, look what the other team has to say about this. So it really is a 360-degree thing.
And if I could, Joe, just for our listeners, at Nosco, they have a very, very complex sales cycle, which involves at least five major stakeholders who are influencers or decision-makers, depending upon the kind of company and the size of the company, and also bringing to market a new, pretty evolutionary solution for their space. So being able to use these personas to say, package engineer, you get this message, supply chain guy, you get this message, and then to tie that to their online behavior so that you're putting together and sending out those automated triggering campaigns that are personalized by persona is very, very powerful. But let's go back to Joe, because I think our listeners would love to hear what your process was for developing. And you call it a persona database, which I'm fascinated by, and we'll get to persona database in a minute. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how you actually, the process you used for developing your persona database?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. First of all, let me just say it's a journey, not a deliverable. You know some pieces of information. You think you know more than you do, and you probably need a lot more. And then you learn that, and then you'll grow the database as we go forward. But I can tell you that as marketers, we like to get in a conference room and write things up and say, here, this is the answer, because we know everything, right? We're marketers. We're superheroes. Take a step back, that we can't do this in a conference room or on the golf course. This is a company-wide collaborative effort, and it took me a little while to figure that out. But I can tell you from my lessons learned, to give you a head start here, I actually established what I call the hit squad of marketing, sales, and representatives of like personas within our own company. And what that means is, let's say an example, one of our targets was a packaging engineer. Well, we have packaging engineers in our company. So I brought him to the table, the director of R&D. We have a quality director, and so does our customer. So I brought him to the table. So we brainstormed together and came up with personas and in those categories that I mentioned. And we took a 2-3 week break. We came back together. Then we revalidated what we did. And then we put around key messages for, okay, what's the pain point and our value and how do we communicate that to them? And we created that. And then we have some creative people in our group, people that are in quality and other parts of the business that are in the marketing. We actually put some campaigns together just to kind of make sure we understood as a marketing group what what's inside their mind as a quality director, process focused, you know, no defects, or a packaging engineer. It's got to hit these parameters. It's got to have this kind of performance in any package. And a package could take 4 months to develop. So we really want to understand what's in the minds of our targets or our prospects. So once we did that, we created the database. And what we're trying to do now is we're going to go find some friends in the industry that are actually those personas. So we're going to find a packaging engineer at a major drug company and a smaller drug company. And we're going to review with them because they're our friends. We know them for a long time. And help us refine those. And at that time, we could ask the hard questions that we just don't know. How do you get your data? How do you do your research? What sources, what technology do you use? Are you a Twitter guy? Are you a Facebook guy? Are you a Google search guy or a Bing guy? Or what do you do? So we can more effectively target our content and manage our SEO more importantly. And what magazines do you read online? What trade shows do you attend? So we want to make sure we close the loop with the actual personas and then make sure that we're not saying, okay, we're done. Make sure it's a living process that we update frequently.
I think that process is absolutely fabulous. And you're right, as marketers, we tend to want to have and know all the answers, and so we'll get in the room and say, okay, we've got a persona built. But what you guys have done is really, you've done it right. First of all, you've involved both sales and marketing, and you've also involved the light personas to come up with what, you know, your, like I'll call your go-to-market persona or your beta persona, and then going out to the market and asking those light personas, does this sound right? Are these the mediums that you use? As you were saying, are you a Twitter guy? If you have a problem, do you go to the web and do research? What types of content do you respond to best? What does your buying cycle look like? I mean, you're absolutely correct, and I think that's a fabulous process. So, again, create it in-house first. Use both sales and marketing. If you have light personas, definitely bring those light personas in. Get you some beta personas, and I never thought about this before, but that's a great idea. And then take that to those personas in the market and test it. Say, did we hit it? You know, what would you add? I found that it's amazing when you ask what you will find out. So, Joe, how long have you guys been working on the personas? And I know it's a journey, not a destination, but I know that this year you've had a real concerted effort. So how long is this process taking?
You know, I'd say informally we've been doing it for a while, but officially into a structured process, it takes about, I'd say, 3 months to really get it to the place where you can share it with a actual customer persona.
And again, I just love that idea of sharing it with the customer persona.
I was actually thinking, would it be, how much value would there be in actually having a focus group for each persona? Just sitting there listening, I mean, which could be priceless.
Oh, I think it could be. I mean, many years ago, I have a big background in process, but one of the things that HP did many years ago, they actually took the idea of a buy process. This was back in the 80s. And they went to market and they said, they went to their customers and they said, here's how we think we should engage with you in a quote sales process, i.e. really the way you buy. And they sat down with a map and they asked them, does this make sense? And they were able to get feedback from their clients around how to engage with prospects as they entered into the sales cycle. And what they learned was so important that at one point they would new salespeople, when they were entering into a process with a sales process with a prospect, would actually come in with this process map saying, we have found day in and day out, this is how our customers like for us to engage with us. Here's how I'm going to engage with you through this process. What do you think? Again, the feedback we got was invaluable. I love the idea of doing a persona focus group.
Yeah, I got the idea of changing the way we think about interacting with customers because, you know, pharmaceutical salespeople are having a tough time with doctors, right? Because doctors are busy just to make money. Got 10 patients lined up for every time slot. So what the salespeople are doing, they're having webinars after hours, chat sessions. They talk to the doctors, hey, what's the best way to communicate with you? Because when I show up, you cringe because you're busy. So they actually created this whole outside process to educate the doctors, and it was really on the doctor's time. This is when I want to learn, this is what I want to learn, and this is what I need from you. So it's a great process. It really is.
So, Joe, let's talk a minute about social media, because I know you also have some involvement in social media, and certainly it's the hot topic these days. How do we use social media? And a lot of times a client will ask me, well, Debbie, tell me what my social media strategy should be. And I respond, well, do you have prospects who are involved in social media? So tell me a little bit about social media and how developing these personas is helping you shape a social media strategy?
Let's see, that's a good question. First of all, let me say that for the longest time, we as marketers, we push out messages that we think will ring true to any prospect that we want to have engage with us, right? Whether it's a print ad or an email or a trade show, I'm getting to the point where I want to measure my success as if I'm not having a conversation with a prospect or a customer, that I failed. If it's not an interactive dialogue, not saying it has to be an interactive chat, but if there's not a good back and forth between content received, content pushed, and talking about that, then I know I failed. And social media is a great way to establish that dialogue. So we're actually looking at a Ning forum for, back to your point, Debbie, before I go further, we're offering a unique solution to our customers that is new to the industry, it's game-changing, but it takes a lot of education. Our sales cycle is 18 to 24 months from the time that we identify a qualified prospect to actually getting a first order. So it's a very long process. Our goal in this whole marketing activity for prospecting, which is different than keeping a dialogue going with customers, is to condense the time from identified lead, meaning he's in our industry, right, to qualified prospect, which we define as having a meaningful follow-up activity, whether it's a pricing opportunity or a project to work on, et cetera. And that process could be a year from lead to qualified prospect. So one way that we want to further engage with customers is through social media, and we have sort of an Ask the Experts forum. For digital production, we want to be the leader in the industry. We want to have the most education available. We want to educate the whole pharmaceutical and medical device industry. So we're creating that website, as well as having a forum that's purely educational. We're bringing experts in that already have adopted this technology and are finding the economical supply chain and engineering benefits of it, and we're matching them with prospects that want to learn more. And our goal is just to stand back and let them talk to each other, right?
And part of the reason why you guys decided to invest in these areas of social media is that you found through working with personas and doing your research that they would respond to this and they would welcome it.
Yeah, because there's relatively fragmented and hard to understand information around this topic. So we felt, well, since packaging engineers primarily and potentially supply chain people, which is still a question in our minds, will go online and find out answers, why don't we offer them a purely educational forum, very lightly branded with NASCO, so they can interact with each other. And then we'll moderate, engage as needed. But my pipe dream, and I really hope this comes true, is that we're basically standing back and listening. And those guys are talking to each other, and we're learning what the real issues are, because people are asking very heartfelt questions. And then we can continue to tailor our messages to educate them and bring them in as prospects.
So let's change the topic ever so slightly. I would like to ask you, again, there's not a marketing group alive who doesn't have some kind of persona, some kind of target. And over the last few months, you've really had a concerted effort to build this persona database. And as you work with these personas, how does that impact or change your content strategy for your web?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. Typically we create a brochure that speaks to the value proposition of whatever we're selling, having in mind who's going to read it. Okay, packaging engineer, but we want to make sure we have supply chain stuff in there. We want to make sure we have, you know, purchasing, make sure they're okay, and then make sure that, you know, the guys on the shop floor, operations, understand this as well. Well, that's really hard to communicate that. So we're actually creating collateral, creating other material, every material that we create, let me just say this as a broad statement with exceptions, that everything we create is targeted to a very specific persona. Additionally, there's content in the package that speaks to the value to the other members of the other functions within the organization. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of big decisions tend to be team-based. So you can't just focus on one person. You have to really make sure they understand the value to their peers. But once you focus on that, supply chain gets one copy, QA gets their own value proposition. Oh, by the way, this is the benefit to the rest of your organization. And then you've got to figure out through the sales process how to bring them together in a room to talk about this.
Hey, Joe, you probably gave some of our listeners a heart attack when you said that you were going to customize every single piece of content based on persona.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a big initiative for you guys, and do you think it's going to be worth it?
You know, I think the big initiative is just doing it the first time, changing your mind and how you manage your processes, how you do it. But today with, you know, digital collateral production that's high quality and the ease of use for online with marketing automation, once you get into the mode of doing it, that's what you'll do from now on. You'll market that way. Marketing automation, personas, innovative online content is all a change in not just online behavior, but marketing behavior. That's what you do now. That becomes the hub of how you market your products and services to your customers and prospects.
Okay. All right. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm so passionate about building personas and having that personalized and customized messaging. And you're right. We live in a world with all of these Web 2.0 technologies where these things are, quite frankly, easy to do, again, if you have the right technology. Earlier in the interview, you talked a little bit about lead nurturing and the impact that personas is and will continue to have on the kinds of campaigns that you do. Maybe you could share a few more thoughts with us on that.
Sure. You know, in this world of overinformation, you don't have much time to connect with somebody. You have very few time. I mean, I get 200-300 emails a day, and if I open an email and it speaks to me, I may read it, not all the time, but I may read it. But if it's a general blah, 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 I'm going to delete it before I even read the first word. So I think it's very important to have subject lines, have content that speaks to what is this person, this persona, what is he measured on every day? How do you help him accomplish those goals? That's a pretty important thing. He may read it and say, yeah, but that's good, but it's not for me. That's fine. We want people that are qualified leads, not just, you know, people that are interested. But you're going to get the people that open that up and say, yep, that's what I need to do. I'm going to learn about that more. And, you know, packaging engineers, for example, entry level, are just research fiends. They just research like crazy. And if you miss that connection, you're going to miss all that opportunity to get with them. Does that help?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is I know that you also have invested in a marketing automation system. I think it's the Marketo system.
Yes.
And so you're doing the lead scoring, you're doing the lead nurturing. You're doing a lot of kind of innovative demand generation types of things. How has having a marketing automation system like Marketo, how does that marry up with your persona development and your persona database?
You know, what's interesting is to effectively market with personas, I must have marketing automation. You know, we used to use an email service to blast out emails to the market. We did some segmentation based on, you know, the personas, but really had to manage it all manually. And how do you respond? What's the next step after that email blast? How do you get back with those people? how do you really advance it forward to take them to the next level of education? We cared about open, click, and download rates, and that was really the end of it unless we, you know, dedicated somebody to really go do that. And a B2B company, you don't really have a lot of marketing resources. So I just stopped doing it. I said, I can't do this. It's not effective. I'm wasting my time. I'm not getting what I need. So now, since we do have a conversation with personas, the only way to really manage the sheer volume of communication by each persona is to automate the process. Marketing automation, to me, is the hub of the activities I said earlier. You're able to create nurturing campaigns in advance. So based on digital body language, okay, let's say a packaging engineer persona clicks on a certain video or downloads an ebook or a white paper. What's the next thing? Well, depending on what he downloads or what he does, he's going to get the next level of content to further along the nurturing process. And as you said, we'll score each of those activities. And at some point, an email goes to my sales guy, industry manager, BlackBerry, and they know all the activity that he's done. They can effectively prepare for a meeting. They know exactly what's going on. It's all organized. Right now, you know, in the past, not right now, but in the past, everybody had their own spreadsheets. We had Excel spreadsheets all over the place. Had to have all these cumbersome, ridiculous meetings. Now we've organized it to optimize lead generation to qualified prospect. That is our primary goal.
That is awesome. And again, I think the tool you have is Marketo, and you're right. In my opinion, you've got to have a good marketing automation system if you're going to exist and live in this online world, especially as you're looking to create those intimate conversations, regardless of the channel, whether it's Twitter or whether it's email or whatever online channel it is. You know, the marketing automation system is going to be the core of everything.
So, and tied to the CRM, and we have Salesforce.com.
Yeah.
So, you know, the accountability is in both places.
Yes, it is. It is two-way accountability. So here's what we're going to do. I have one more question for Joe, and I'm going to ask Joe to give us some advice if you're a marketer looking to create a persona database in an online world. But before I do this, I want to remind everyone that has called into the show, I may be hanging up on you in just a moment because these are phone lines for callers that have questions to ask. And again, to hear the radio show, all you have to do is go to Blog Talk Radio, search on Persona, and you can see our show page. Or you can click on the link in the email that I sent to you, because in just a few minutes we're going to open the lines for callers to call in and ask Joe questions. So if you're listening over the telephone, please hang up and get this streamed live over the Internet through your speakers on your computer. So I'm going to ask Joe the last question, and then we're going to take questions from folks in the chat room and also folks who want to call in. And I'll give you the dial-in number in just a moment. But, Joe, what piece of advice would you give to the marketer that's looking at creating personas for an online world?
I would say there's probably a few steps there. First, assume you know nothing. Don't go into a conference room and create this on your own. Secondly, invite everyone who touches the customer to participate. Take your best and brightest in each area who touch the customer in some way, because ideas come from everywhere. Thirdly, include those personas within your organization to participate, because after all, it may be a different industry or a different, you know, type of business, but they are your target. They have the same mentality as the people you're going after, whether it's purchasing or engineering or quality, et cetera. And lastly, you know, I'd say find some friends that are personas and ask them to review and have a nice conversation with them. Because they're going to give you insight that you never thought of. I'm thinking. I haven't done it yet, but I can't wait to do it. So that's next on my list. And then I would say, don't let your personas go to waste. Make sure that you target content like crazy till it hurts to your personas, but don't forget that many decisions are made in teams.
Absolutely. And I think that's great advice. Now, if you'd like to call in and ask Joe a question, the dial-in number is 646-478-5604. 646-478-5604. And you can call in and ask Joe any question that you would like about personas and or how to build them. I do also believe that Tom from the chat room also has a couple of questions. And one question that did come up as I was looking in the chat room, and I think you've already kind of answered it, but if you could just reiterate for us, and how long do you think this building these this persona database takes? I mean, if you're really moving with the process, how long does it take?
You know, I'd say to do it effectively, you do it over a 2 to 3 month period, giving some soak time and getting more people involved. So I think that's a reasonable expectation to get your first, set of data and then refine it over time. But I would also, let me jump in and say that when I talked with people in our organization, they also helped me out with the creative. Okay, this is your persona. How do I reach you? What's in your mind? What are you going to respond to? And they give me some really interesting information, so keep that in mind as well.
So what kind of creative do they give you, Joe?
Well, for example, the quality director and his operations manager, very creative people. I asked them, I said, okay, you know, these are very process-oriented, no defects, blah, blah, blah. What should I really give to them? I'm thinking, well, I better be very scientific, I better do this. And they're saying, no. These guys, they all watch, like, Monty Python, they all watch, I forget the show on Discovery Channel, that they blow stuff up. And they, these are the guys that want to have some fun. That's what they're going to respond to. And to me, that
and
was a whole new thing.
And you would never would have thought that, would you?
No, I'd be thinking, well, I better wow them with statistics, right?
That's so interesting. That's so interesting. Tom, are you in? Tom Kahana?
I am here.
Okay, Tom, you've been moderating the chat room. Do you have any questions from the chat room?
Yes, I've got a few. Marsha wants to know, what did you learn as you were developing these personas, and were there any aha moments?
That's a really interesting question. I've been saying that a lot because there are a lot of good questions, but there were some aha moments around not necessarily what their pain points were because we deal with that quite a bit, but I'd say maybe in some of the new roles like supply chain executives. Let me just take a deep step back. Pharmaceutical never had to worry about manufacturing because they were just making money like crazy, selling incredible drugs. Now that there's a lot of price pressure and the threat of reimportation of drugs, supply chain is a big deal. In fact, I'm here in Arlington, Virginia, attending an FDA supply chain conference. So all these new roles emerge, VP of supply chain, manager of supply chain, ties to purchasing. Boy, what does that mean in the whole mix? So it really enabled us to take a step back, do research, and identify those new roles. But in our current customers, personas in purchasing and packaging engineering, we understand what they need, but what the aha was, even in those, were, okay, this is how we satisfy their needs today. This is how we meet their pain points. And then we said, wow, what can we do next that's going to even make it easier for them to do their jobs, meet their objectives, and have competitive differentiation over our competitors? So I think that was the big aha.
Okay, excellent. Another question, Tom?
Yes, this one comes from Tony. How have you implemented personas with the sales organization?
Ooh, great question.
Yeah, that is. It's interesting because our salespeople tend to focus on packaging and purchasing and then occasionally get into the other personas. So while they are focused on their personas, and the emails and all the communication actually come from the individual salesperson to add credibility, which puts more responsibility on us, we're actually able to focus on the guys they don't talk to, the supply chain, the quality. So we kind of split the duties. They focus on what they know best and interact that way, and all the emails come from them. They get all the advance notice on what's going out, and they get all the responses, all the returns. And then we nurture this other group, and then we actually did this once. We brought a supply chain manager into the salesperson's realm so they could have a dialogue. So there is a lot of interconnectivity.
So that is so interesting, and it's always so true. Salespeople will tend to focus narrowly, not always broadly. And as you guys discovered, because of a changing market, there were new people who were influencers and or decision makers in their buy process for your solutions, having the sales guys focus on what they know best, which was packaging and purchasing, and then having marketing enter into that online dialogue and give that additional intelligence to sales to then bring those additional people into the conversation. I think that's a fabulous idea, absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, and when we started putting RFID tags on labels, we had a whole slew of IT people getting engaged that salespeople would never even call on, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Again, if you'd like to call in and ask Joe a question about how he has developed personas and how he does segmentation based on personas, the dial-in number is 646-478-5604. And do we have any more questions from the chat room, Tom?
Just one that wanted to be confirmed. You said you had Marketo as your marketing automation. That's correct?
Yes.
And Salesforce as your CRM?
Yes.
Okay, great. Another one just came in from Tony. Did you guys conduct any qualitative interviews prior to the developing personas?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
No, we didn't. We felt we were intimate with our customers that we could put a draft together and then confirm it with them. But I highly recommend that somebody does that. If I did it all over again, I would do that.
Okay. All right. Well, we are just about out of time. So, Joe, I really want to thank you for being part of our show today. I think your story is an incredible one. I know that the organization, because I know this organization has put a lot of work behind creating these personas and really going to market with marketing automation, with Marketo as kind of like the foundation for everything. So thank you very much, Joe. We really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Hopefully it was helpful.
It was. And finally, today's interview with Joe, the Q&A from the live questions and also the chat, a white paper on building personas will be available in the DG Essentials toolkit by tomorrow morning. And again, the broadcast is free. You can go get it off Blog Talk Radio anytime. But if you would like to use the additional assets that we have, just go to our website, www.pedowitzgroup.com. You can register in the left-hand column if you're not already registered. If you are registered, you will expect an email from us sometime tomorrow. And in closing, I just want to mention to everybody that next week we're going to be interviewing Laura Zexter, and this is, again, going to be a very cool interview. Laura is the director of e-business for the TD Garden and the Boston Bruins. So we're going to go from a very complex, long sales cycle to really more of a B2C type sales cycle with very, very, very quick turnarounds. But Laura is doing some very innovative campaigns using social media. If anyone has heard about the golden ticket that was given away in Boston, she is going to be talking about how she used social media to help her with that. And she's also going to be talking about how they built and are effectively using. Okay, that's our end. So, again, thank everyone for joining us today. You can go to Blog Talk Radio. Just type in the name Debbie Guy Geish, QAQISH, and get access to all of the Blog Talk Radio interviews. And we'll see you next week, Thursday, 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. Everyone have a great week, and thanks for attending our broadcast today. Bye-bye.